Welcome to the Story Mine. I'm David Bullock, and I'm here with my co-host,
Kathy Barker. Here at the Story Mine, we love good stories. And today we're going to hear a variety of folk tales from around the world. Our first teller is Ellie Reedy. She tells a beautiful tale called The Scholar and the Bird, in which a man learns that a small brown bird is not all it seems to be.
Long ago, in a land far away from here, there lived a scholar who worked in the National Archive. He began in a lowly place, but he was diligent and hardworking, and he was soon overseeing this library. As his responsibilities increased, so too did his wage, and he was at last able to purchase for himself a modest house with a small walled garden. The scholar found that working in his little garden after his day's work was finished calmed his mind. Designing, planting, and weeding gave him a sense of connection to things living. It kept him aware of life in the world, and not just life in books. He enjoyed his home, and he wanted to share his life with someone, but finding a wife was not an easy thing. Those he found attractive were not interested in him, and those interested in him were not attractive. It was an unresolved and ongoing situation. Not long after he had moved into his house, he had noticed a small brown bird, something like a wren, had built a nest in a bush that had been planted by a previous owner. The bird watched him as he worked in the garden in the evenings, its bright little eyes following his every move. And the scholar was fascinated with this little bird, searching through his library of books and the records, trying to discover what kind of bird it was. He couldn't find anything that was exactly right. Colors didn't quite match. Markings were not quite right. And the eyes, well, no bird had eyes quite like these. He began to feed the bird each morning before he left for work, and then again in the evening. He enjoyed the chirped greetings, looked forward to them, really, when he came into the garden at night. And the bird seemed to always be waiting for him, expecting him, wanting something more than food. And the scholar wondered at this. The more he tried to dismiss this idea as a silly thought brought on by his loneliness or too much study, the more real this came to feel to him. One day, while weeding under the little bird's bush, the scholar unearthed a small wooden box. He picked it up, examining the workmanship. It had been beautifully carved, but years in the ground had begun to break it down, and curious, he tried to open the box, and it broke apart in his hands. But he pulled out of it a lock of dark brown hair, tied with a red string. Out of nowhere, the little bird swooped down, snatched the hair out of his hand, and flew to the far side of the garden. Startled, the scholar leapt up to go chase after the bird, but there was a pop and a shimmer, and the faint scent of jasmine. Standing where the bird had been was a rather plain-looking woman, in a simple brown dress, her dark brown hair tied back with a red string. But the eyes were the same, bright and shining, with a hint of laughter. The scholar could hardly breathe as the woman began to laugh and dance in circles, her arms spread wide as she whirled and twirled about, and dizzy she fell down, still laughing as the scholar rushed to her side. She wasn't hurt, and she sat up, her bright eyes filling with tears. "Thank you," she said, and she kissed the tip of his nose. The scholar drew back in surprise. No one had ever kissed him before, ever, especially not on the tip of his nose. And the woman leapt up, laughing, and ran to the remains of the wooden box, gathered them up into her hands and crushed them to powder, flung them into the air, and the wind caught them and carried them away. She turned to look at the scholar. "Thank you." And laughing and twirling and dancing, she was gone. The scholar got up from the grass and slowly walked over to the bush that had been the little bird's home. Gently, he touched the nest, and he looked around the garden, dazed a bit by what had happened. He went inside, sat down in his favorite chair, and for the first time that he could remember, he wept. He woke up early in the morning, still sitting in his chair, and he got up to go and feed the bird and suddenly remembered she wasn't there, although his mind still couldn't accept what he had seen. He bathed and dressed and went to work. And that evening, he didn't go into the garden. In fact, it was weeks before he even noticed that a little bird had moved into the nest, just a plain, ordinary bird. And the scholar nodded, This was the way of things, after all. A few months later, the scholar met a woman from a neighboring town, and he found her very attractive. She found him quite interesting. And as it turned out, they both enjoyed gardening. He never told her why the little bush with the nesting bird was so important to him, and she never asked. And years later, when the scholar died, his children buried his ashes there under the bush, as he had asked them to do. Early the next morning, the youngest called them all out to come and to look at the bush. "Look," she said, "what's this?" And lying in the bottom of the nest was a lock of dark brown hair tied with a red string.
Our next storyteller is Liz Weir. She has been a guest on our program in the past. She's a globe-trotting storyteller from Northern Ireland who has entertained both young and old, telling stories on all five continents. From her CD, The Glen of Stories, she tells Jack and the Magic Horse.
This is a story told to me by Johnny Collins, a traveler friend from Dublin. Long ago, in the town of Kilkenny, there lived a boy called Jack. He and his parents were very poor. They lived in a cottage not far from the famous Kilkenny Castle. Now, Jack didn't get on too well with the boys and girls his own age. They teased him. He wasn't good at reading. He wasn't good at writing. They called him names. They laughed at him. They called him stupid. But Jack was far from stupid. He had talents and gifts none of the others possessed. Jack had a gift of looking after animals. Horses were his specialty. He always longed for a horse of his own, but with his family being so poor, they'd hardly hope of it. But when he was old enough, his parents managed to buy him a small, spindly foal, so sick people said it would never survive. But Jack used his talents. He nursed that horse. He sat up with it night after night until eventually it grew into a strong young foal and then into a fully grown horse. When it was old enough to have shoes put on its feet, he took it into the grounds of Kilkenny Castle, where there was a blacksmith. As he waited in turn, he suddenly noticed soldiers running this way and that way, swords drawn. Jack said, "What's going on?" The people said, "Read the notice." And there on the wall was a royal proclamation. But Jack couldn't read. He said, "I can't make out what it says. What does it say?" The people laughed. They said, "You're stupid. You don't need to know." But finally, an old man told him what it said. It said that the King of Ulster had come down from the north and had kidnapped the Princess Aoife, the King of Leinster's only daughter, and her father would give 5 bags of gold and his daughter's hand in marriage to anyone who could go up and bring her back. "That's just the job for me," said Jack. They said, "You? Sure, you're stupid. You couldn't even read the notice on the wall. And do you know what sort of people they are in the north? They'd fight with their shadow. You'll never make it. How will you get there? The roads are bad." Jack said, "I've a fine black horse that will take me there." And he jumped on his horse and rode off over hill and over dale until he came over the brow of a hill. And there in front of him was a bog, an Irish peat bog, so marshy that not even a bird could land on it without sinking. Jack stopped and said, "How am I to cross this?" And all of a sudden a voice spoke. "Put your hand in my left ear, Jack." "Who said that?" "I did," said the horse. "You helped me when I was sick. I have magic powers. Let me now help you." And Jack reached his hand into the horse's left ear and pulled out a stone, a pebble. "Throw it in front of you," said the horse. And Jack threw the stone, and the minute it hit the ground, a hard, straight road went right across the bog. Jack was able to gallop across, and sure enough, he came to the King of Ulster's castle. There, in a tall tower, he saw a white handkerchief waving. There was the princess. But how was he going to get her down? Now, no long hair in this story, different country. All of a sudden, the horse spoke again. Take a hair from my tail, Jack. Jack plucked a hair from the horse's tail, threw it in front of him, and a magical horsehair ladder came down the tower. Princess Aoife was able to climb down, jumped in the back of the horse, and off they galloped. But the King of Ulster's men were in full pursuit, and it was a long way from Kilkenny up and back, and Jack's horse was tiring as he went across the hard, straight road. He spoke again. Reach into my right ear, Jack. Jack put his hand into the horse's right ear and pulled out a piece of turf, such as would burn on the fire. Jack threw it behind him, and the minute it touched the hard road, it sank down into the bog, and with it the King of Ulster's men. Jack brought the Princess Aoife safely home to her father. All they hugged and kissed, and the king gave Jack 5 bags of gold. Jack said, excuse me, was there something about your daughter's hand in marriage? The king laughed. Do you think I'm going to let my daughter marry the likes of you, who couldn't even read a notice on the wall? But the princess spoke up and said, wait, father. Jack has proven he's clever, he's brave, he's kind. He keeps his word, and I'll thank you to keep yours. Anyway, she said, I like the look of him. So that's how Jack, the poor boy who couldn't read or write, married a king's daughter. And the man that told me that story, Johnny Collins, said there's an important message for everyone in it, and that is, never call anyone else stupid.
Julie Barnson, a Utah storyteller, enlightens us with a Danish folktale about Blockhead Hans, who learns that being yourself can win hearts.
When the Princess Griselda turned 16 years old, she decided it was time to get married. But she didn't want to marry just anyone. She had been taught by the finest scholars in the land. She was a smart girl, and she wanted to marry a smart boy. She had met the other princes, the other noblemen, and they weren't so smart. They liked to talk about their dogs, their horses, hunting, boring. And so she decided that if a nobleman wasn't good enough, she would marry anyone, prince or peasant. So she took an ad out in the newspaper, and she sent the proclamation out that anybody who wished to marry the princess could come to the castle at a specified time and impress her with their wit and conversation and intelligence, and she would choose the best one to marry. The news traveled far and wide until it came to the home of a squire who had 2 sons who thought they were very intelligent indeed. The older brother, Gregory, he loved to study the Latin dictionary, and he knew any princess would want to talk about the Latin dictionary. He was also up on his current events because he read the newspaper every day. The younger brother, Friedrich, he loved to read big, thick tomes of law and knew that any princess would want to discuss anything in a big, thick tome of law. He also liked leather working and could talk about that all day long. So they approached their father and told him of their plans to marry the princess. Their father was, of course, delighted. He outfitted them with fine new suits, gave them each a bag of gold, a new steed, gathered all of the servants together into the courtyard, where they waved and cheered as they rode off to marry the princess. Now, the squire had another son. He was not so smart. They called him Blockhead, Blockhead Hans. And at the time the brothers were riding away, he was daydreaming in the field, chewing on a piece of grass, playing with his pet goat. He heard the cheering, and curious, he wandered into the courtyard and asked a servant what was going on. The servant said, well, your brothers are going off to marry the princess. Princess, he said, I want to marry the princess. So he went to his father. Father, I want to marry the princess. You, the squire said, I'm not wasting good money on you. You don't have a chance of marrying the princess. Some people might be discouraged by this, but not Hans. Well, he said, if you won't give me new clothes, I'll wear the rags I've got. If you won't give me a bag of gold, I'll pick up whatever I find on the road, and I'll just ride my pet goat if I don't have a horse. And that's exactly what he did. He rode off, and nobody cheered him. Gregory and Friedrich had been riding for some time in peace and quiet, when behind them they heard a terrible noise. It was, "Hey, wait for me!" And there was their brother, dressed in rags, riding a goat, waving his arms frantically. He came up to them, wiped his brow. "Whoa! I am so glad I caught up with you guys. I found something so amazing by the side of the road." He reached into one of his pockets. His pants had many large pockets, and he pulled out a cracked wooden shoe. The brothers looked. "It's a cracked wooden shoe," they said. "Yeah, I know. It's great. You don't find wooden shoes by the side of the road every day. So I picked it up, and I put it in my pocket, and I'm going to give it to the princess." The brothers stared, then started to laugh. They turned and rode off down the road, leaving the slower Hans far behind. They rode in peace and quiet for a short time until, behind them, they heard it again. It was, "Hey, wait for me!" And there he was again, coming up. "Oh," he said, "I got something even better by the side of the road this time." He reached into another pocket. He pulled something out. The brothers stepped back. "Why did you put a dead bird in your pocket?" "This isn't just any dead bird," he said. "It's a crow. Look at it. It has nice soft feathers, and they're kind of rainbowy in the light, and I picked it up and I put it in my pocket, and I'm going to give it to the princess." Horrified, the brothers stared for a moment, then laughed and took off down the road, leaving Hans far behind. They rode in peace and quiet for almost an hour, when behind them, there it was again. It was Hans waving his arms, calling out, coming up on the goat. He said, "I got the best thing yet." He reached into still another pocket. He pulled out a handful of mud. "Why did you put mud in your pockets?" Well, this isn't just any mud. This is really good ditch mud. Look, it's all dark and rich and wonderful, and I filled the rest of my pockets with it, and I'm going to give it to the princess, and she's going to love me." That was all the brothers needed to hear. They turned, they rode off, and they didn't stop until they got to the castle, where they found themselves at the end of a very, very long line. They were given numbers, 647, 648, and they waited as person after person in front of them went into the castle and did not come back out. Finally, it was Gregory's turn. He walked into the throne room. It was stifling hot, and he had no idea there would be so many people crammed into the sides of the throne room, all staring right at him. The floor of the throne room was slick and shiny marble, and at the end of the throne room, on the throne, was, oh, the princess. She was amazing. His collar felt tight. He felt a little shaky. He knew he needed to calm down just a little bit, so trying to loosen his collar, he looked up at the ceiling to gain his composure. That was a mistake. The ceiling was studded with mirrors, and so when he looked up, all he saw was his own red, nervous face looking right back at him. Carefully, he made his way to the throne. She waited expectantly. "Oh, it's, hot in here," he said. "Yes, we're roasting chickens today," she said, smiling sweetly. What did chickens have to do with the Latin dictionary? Everything he had planned, everything he had practiced, it went completely out of his head. He couldn't think of a thing to say. He stood there stupidly until finally the princess sighed and said, "Next." And then it was Friedrich's turn, and it was the same thing. The heat, the people, the shining floor, the princess, the studded mirrors. He approached the throne. "Oh, it sure is hot in here," he said. "Yes, we're roasting chickens today." "Oh, it sure is hot in here. Next." But that was the end of the line. The princess was starting to think she was never going to get married when a commotion started up right at the entrance to the throne room. Coming straight into the throne room, dressed in rags, riding a goat, came a young man. The goat's hooves hit the slick marble floor, and it slid all the way across the throne room until it came to a stop right in front of the throne. "Whew! It's hot in here," he said. "Yes, we're roasting chickens today," she said, smiling. "Well, great," he said. "I've got something to roast, too." He reached into a pocket. He pulled out the dead crow. "I can roast this." "Well, that would be fine," she said. "I hope you brought your own pot to cook it in. We don't have any to spare." "A pot? I've got something." He reached into the other pocket, pulled out the wooden shoe, stuffed the bird inside. "How's that for a cooking pot?" "That's fine," she said. "But if you roast it like that, it's going to come out awfully dry. You're going to need some kind of gravy." "Gravy? Oh, yeah, I've got some gravy." He reached out, pulled out a handful of mud, and splooched it right on top of that bird. "How's that for gravy?" "Oh, you are so funny," she said. "You are the first person today who has said more to me than, 'Oh, it's so hot in here.' You must be very clever indeed. I think that I shall marry you." Well, Hans was happy about that. She said, "But if you take a look over in the crowd over there, there's that man that's writing down everything we say. He is a reporter for the newspaper, and you need to know that he is an absolutely terrible reporter. He takes the things that people say, and he makes them sound very foolish. What are you going to do about that?" Hans knew exactly what to do. He got on his goat, slid his goat right over to that reporter, reached out, got another handful of mud, and splooched it right into that reporter's face. And that is how Blockhead Hans married the Princess Griselda and became king in time over the land. I happen to know that this story is true because I read about it in the newspaper. And you know, you can always believe anything you read in the newspaper.
Here at the Story Mine, you too can share your stories. Contact us at thestorymine@gmail.com.
Listen in again next week at 8:30 Sunday morning for the Story Mine. And like us at facebook.com/thestorymine.
Goodbye.